This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Lauren Denyer. How are you, Lauren?
I'm very well, thank you, Chris. How are you?
I'm very good. You are the Level 4 tutor and you teach at the London School.
Yes, right. So, yeah, WST School London on Bermondsey Street. So, yeah, I'm an educator for diploma and I do organise activities and events for our diploma students as well.
Lovely. I want to talk a wee bit about the D3 theory exam.
Okay.
And that's the big one. It's the
It's the one that sends fear into most of our students. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
It's worth 50% of your final grade.
Yes. So, I mean, 25% of that will be tasting, but yes, 25% of that 50% will be the theory.
Oh, part. So the weighting, because...
Well, I mean, you've got to pass both parts. So in a sense, yeah, but, you know, you've got to pass... You do have to pass theory, yeah.
And it's that D3. That's the one that, if you're going to have struggle with... It's the D3 theory.
Definitely. I think that's the one that most students do struggle, yes. Yeah.
Do you think if you're doing the D3, you should do it at the end so that you've had a bit of practice with the exams with Fortified and Spark?
Potentially. I know not all APPs do that, but that is how we do it.
Yeah.
So you have had that chance to familiarise yourself with the open response structure of questions. You know, you've had four opportunities to do that by the time you get to D3. So I think it makes sense. And by that time, also, you're very familiar with the SAT for tasting. So, you know, there's that too. So I think it makes sense to do it later. But I know it's not what every APP does, but it's what we do here at WST School London.
You've got to do wine production and wine business first anyway.
Well, yes, you do have to do those anyway. Yeah, absolutely. Because you refer back to those. You know, there's no point going into D3 just having read the D3 materials. You do need to refer back to D1 and D2 before you do D3.
And is that because... You say you have to refer back, but quite often you need to be able to understand things like climate and winemaking techniques, and that's all from D1.
Exactly. So you'll get asked general questions about climate, but they won't be specific to a region necessarily when it comes to D1. But when you come to D3... they'll be asking you about specific climates of specific places, and maybe you'll need to compare places. So you would need to go back and think, okay, what are the key things about climate? And that would be covered in D1.
And the other thing you've talked about a few times in some interviews we've had earlier is the business of wine.
Mm.
You don't talk about the business of wine too much at Level 3, but at Level 4, it becomes an important part of it.
It does. And again, you might well be asked about, you know, like the Place de Bordeaux, for example, or you could be asked, you know, within context, a wider context probably for Bordeaux, it wouldn't be taking up all the marks. But we had a question in D4, about champagne and asking about marketing. So, yeah, you know, there could be a little bit, or maybe even more, you know, of a D3 question which incorporates a marketing element or a business element.
Do you think students make too much of D3? I mean, I've spoken to a lot of students who panic about D3 and they're quite concerned about it.
I think it's daunting, and I think especially when, you know, this is a part-time course, so we are now, you know, you're now about to embark on an exam of 2 hours and then a break and then another exam of 80 minutes. And, you know, when was the last time you did an exam that was, you know, over 3 hours, a written exam over 3 hours? I think it's a daunting prospect for lots of people. And not everyone doing this. If we think about the world of wine, you know, not everyone who works in wine went through sort of academic pathways, went to university, etc. So it's, again, a new thing for a lot of people. So, yeah, I do think there is an element of terror for quite a few students. And even those who have, you know, had more academic experience, there's a lot of content. Yeah. There's a lot to remember. I just think, you know, for me, I just remember thinking, oh, where do I start? You know, it's a daunting prospect.
Yeah. Okay, so let's touch on a couple of things. So we've said already that wine production is a key part of the D3 exam.
Yes.
The business of wine is a key part of that as well. So it would be really handy to revise that as
Definitely,
well.
Definitely, yes.
And maybe even revise it before you even start the D3. Just keep it in your mind.
Well, yeah, try not to forget it after you've done your D2 exam, yeah. Your D1 and D2 exam. Just keep refreshing back if you can.
I always think I'm quite analytical in terms of my approach. I always like to taste the wine. And when I'm tasting the wine, try and understand how it's come about.
Yeah.
And maybe if you have that D3, the wine production in your mind whenever you're tasting a wine and thinking about that, that sort of thing might help a little bit.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, you know, it's, I think when you can link, you know, and you've got a region and you can, you know, make all those links with the region. I think geography is one of the most helpful things, to be honest.
Yeah.
If you know what the climate and the weather are like in the world, in places in the world, then you can make logical sort of deductions on what will and will not happen in those regions, wine regions. So, yeah, just, you know, help yourself by making links, and they can be general, but in order to get good, really good marks, you would need to be more specific.
Yeah. We talked previously about, producers. You need to be able to mention producers. Not compulsory, but for good marks.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are some producers mentioned in the materials. So, you know, if you can use those, do. Of course, you can use other producers as long as, you know, they're relatively well known. And to give examples, but no, I don't, they're not, you know, it's more conceptual. You know, you can talk about, you know, in a particular region, there may be particular things that are done, or maybe there are a range of things that are done. And as long as you can point those out and say sort of why and how maybe relate it to the style and the quality of the wine, then fine. But you don't need to be sort of writing a whole list of all these producers and things. That's not really the aim.
We also touched on soils and the importance of soils, specifically if it's relevant. But I always think of soils as being a response to climate. So if, you know, as you used an example earlier about Jerez being dry, so you need soils that might be able to hold on to water, such as limestone, or in a wet environment, you need soils that drain very well. So being able to link those two is quite handy. But also, how important to remember the soils and be able to use them as examples in the essays?
I think you need to know of the main soil types that exist.
Gravel, clay,
you know,
limestone.
Exactly, schist, you know, things like that.
But you wouldn't necessarily need to know, say, Comedogen clay.
I think you probably ought to know about Comedogen clay because it is, you know, you get it in the south of Champagne, in Chablis, in Sancerre. So, yeah, I mean, any classic regions, I think you should know what the soil types are.
Or like Liquialia from Pure.
Exactly,
Ash,
yeah. You should know those. I think, you know, if we're talking about, I know, a really smaller region, then maybe you might not know it so much. But and then, you know, if somewhere's volcanic, you know, it's quite self-explanatory. So I think where we've got classic regions, you need to know all those specific details. I think for lesser known regions, maybe not so much. And you're not going to be asked probably to talk about them in as much detail as well.
In the diploma, the specification, in level 3 anyway, it sort of talks about key regions and key grape varieties and other grape varieties and things like that, or grape varieties in particular. Is there any way of identifying what are the important regions you need to know lots about, or the less so important regions?
I think you can try and work it out by how much is actually covered in the book.
Okay.
So Bordeaux would be quite a lot, I think, followed by Burgundy, and then, you know, the Loire going on, and then, you know, places like Rioja is quite a bit on. So, yeah, I think you can tell how many pages there are in the book is probably a relative amount of how much you need to study. Definitely aren't going to pass the diploma if you do not know your classic regions.
Okay. Vintages. Vintages are so important in Bordeaux, as you're just mentioning. You know,
yes.
Vintage variability becomes really important. But the textbook doesn't really go into vintages too much. Now, is that a function of the fact that they don't think it's important, or that no one wants to maintain that part in the textbook?
Well, I think, you know, it's wise not to talk about it too much, because otherwise every year you're going to have to update it, aren't you? So, like you say. But, you know, I think you need to point out in regions where vintage is a thing. Yeah. So, you know, evidently somewhere like Bordeaux, Left Bank, you would specify that, you know, there probably would be questions relating to it. But I don't think you need to be, you know, specify.
You don't say 2009 or 2010.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think you'd be penalised if you did by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think you need to spend your days leading up to the exam going through vintages, vintage charts to work out what was good, what was bad, etc. Yeah.
I was talking to Ewan, who does some marking, and he's basically got a grid, and if it's on there, he gives a mark, and if it's not there, he doesn't. Yeah. Vintages aren't really in the textbook, so you wouldn't necessarily expect it on the grid anyway.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. And in fact, when I teach, I don't really talk about vintages, only from a general point of view. So when I'm teaching sparkling wine, I might mention to my students some of the better recent vintages, just for their information. So if they want to go and buy some nice champagne, they know which ones to buy. But I don't expect them to be writing about it in their exams.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about the D3 in a bit more detail now, because that is the kicker. How is the exam structured? You said there's two exams.
Yeah.
And how are the two exams separated?
Well, it's kind of the same exam, but it's in two parts. So you've got paper one and paper two. There's no difference in terms of content. You know, it can be anything on either paper. There's not like one is particular parts of the world and one is others. So paper one consists of, there's four questions on the paper of which students choose three to answer. So there's an element of choice.
Yeah.
A little bit. No compulsory question like there used to be. So I think a lot of people are relieved about that. So you've got 40 minutes per question. So that's 2 hours to answer those three questions. Then you'll have a break. It's usually an hour, and then come back and you'll sit the next paper, so same exam, but just the second half. Well, it's less than half, because this time out of three questions, you answer two. So that's an 80-minute exam.
Okay.
So 5 questions in total will be answered. And then when the students, when they're marked, the students will need to get an average of at least 55% to pass. So it doesn't matter if they fail some of those individual questions, as long as their overall mark is 55%.
Okay, because normally you need to pass individual components to get an overall mark, but this one, it doesn't matter. You could fail the second one, but if you ace the first one...
Well, absolutely. If there was a question, let's say, on Valpolicella and you got 30%, but then you got like 90% on a question on, I don't know, chili or something, then you're going to be all right.
Yeah. Okay. So that's an important element there, isn't it? Okay. And the questions themselves, are they back to the classic verbs, command work?
Definitely. All the command verbs you see in the previous units, well, in the other units, I should say, then yes, you'll see those again. You'll probably have more evaluation questions here because you've got more time to delve into. You've got 40 minutes for one question, whereas with the other exams, you know, you've got shorter periods of time for each question. So you might need to be a bit more analytical for D3.
How would you approach an evaluation question?
With caution.
Are these the hard ones?
I think they can.
At level three, it's the explain ones that kill you.
I think it depends on your strengths and weaknesses. I think some people like questions that are very straightforward and basically are telling you exactly what to answer, mm-hmm. whereas others like ones that are a little bit more almost conversational. And I think you do what your strengths are, but make sure you plan. Whatever it is, plan. And I think definitely in an exam, a question which can lend itself to writing a lot of stuff which could potentially be irrelevant, then yes, make sure you write down and signpost as well. Like, it's really nice for the examiner if they can see that you have structured what you're writing. So they know that next paragraph, you know, is separate to the previous paragraph and is going to be talking about something else if that's what's relevant to the structure. So, yeah, make sure whatever you're doing, it's written clearly and structured.
Do you think that, like, I remember when I was in high school quite a few years ago, my English teacher, because I was always a problem child with English, they always said, look, before you even start writing anything, write down what you want to say in the question. And then write your answer. Do you think that's a good idea in these type of situations? Or do you think you should just go for it?
Oh, I don't think you should just go for it ever. I think you should plan. And I think you should always look back and remind yourself what the question is. You know, if it comes to a point where you've written a lot and you're beginning to doubt that you actually are on topic, read the question again. Mm. You know, but if you've planned, you shouldn't really need to do that. So I think a lot of people underestimate the value of planning. And actually, a lot of people think, oh God, I've only got 40 minutes to answer this question. But actually, 5 minutes can save you 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, if you do a good plan, you don't have to think about what you need to write next because you've already done it. And I think when the adrenaline is there at the start of a question, that's a really good time to go, right, boom, 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 boom. You know, however you plan, maybe you'll do a spidergram or maybe you'll do a list, you know, maybe you'll do a grids, but do it. And then it's done. And then actually you can comfortably enjoy writing your answer rather than sitting there thinking, oh, what have I just written? What do I need to do next?
The nice thing about planning is it gives you an opportunity to write linkages as well.
Exactly, yeah. So you'll notice as you're writing things down that, yeah, there are links. And also you might realise that actually there's a better order. So you've written stuff down and then actually, I know, I remember planning my essays and writing what would look like complete nonsense on a piece of paper. But then I'd start scrawling number one here, two here, three here and kind of create, you know, a cohesive plan, which obviously to me looked was cohesive. Maybe anyone just looking at that piece of paper wouldn't be. But yeah, I think we don't emphasize enough how important planning is.
Should you write your plan in the text, in the answer book, or on a scrap
of paper? Oh, you'll have scrap paper in the exam, so use a scrap paper.
Okay. And do you find students sometimes run out of space?
Well, we always give them more paper. So it's a bit different from, I don't know, I can't remember what they do now for the theory exams for level three. But
they give you little boxes to write in.
Oh, right, yeah, we've got lined paper. So there's no boxes. So you just can use as much lined paper as you want. So in the exam, you know, they get in the envelope with the question paper, they get some paper. But for some students, that's not enough. So they just get handed paper. They pop their hand up and an invigilator will come around and give them some more paper.
You mentioned ways of planning. You mentioned spider's graph, grid and a list. Can we just dive into these a little bit more?
Can do. I mean, that's just, you know, it's planning is individual, isn't it? So, you know, whatever works for each individual, really.
One of the things that certainly in my experience is that the exams often, or the command verbs often have almost like a structure to use to write them in. And Ewan, who we interviewed a wee while ago and in the podcast, he seemed to think that once you understand the structure, life becomes a lot easier.
I think so. Yeah, if you can pin a structure to a question and how you'd answer a question, then yeah, I mean, you create your plan in the format of that structure. But sometimes for some people it's just getting out the information off in their brain onto paper and then sort of moving it around, you know, to work with the structure. So yeah, I think work with that structure. Maybe the structure will help you form your plan, or maybe your plan you fit into the structure afterwards.
I suppose everybody approaches it differently. Is there any resources that you recommend to students to help them learn that? Because especially if you've got English as a foreign language, this sort of thing is gold dust in terms of how to approach it. Because if you get the approach right, everything, it makes it easier to get what you know down.
I suppose, you know, I don't get asked a lot about how to do it because I think students presume they can and then find out probably
they can't do it as well as they should. Yeah.
But we do provide a lot of practice questions and papers for the students in the run-up to the exams. So for D3 at the school, we give the students 5 weekly questions to complete, and they do that and then they get marked individually. So they have feedback from those to help them. Also, there is quite a lot on planning and how to approach the theory exam in the theory guidance that they have access to as well. So I think just practice, know your weaknesses and your strengths, and also apply that to the kind of questions that you answer or you avoid answering as well.
All right then, Lauren, I think we'll wrap it up there. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.